Merkle Media.
Welcome to Back It Up Fridays with Hammer Lane Legends. I am your host, Jack Merkle, and I'm here to deliver the goods once again on a Friday. I hope you're all having a great week, and let's get to the weekend, right? So let's get into it. I'm backing it up all the way to episode 68, Driving in Germany. This was with Kurt. Kurt actually was an Army veteran. He joined the Army in 1983. He was 18. This was a great conversation. He had a ton of experience from so many different jobs. He learned to drive over in Germany. Imagine that. That's got to be crazy, right? And on top of that, he actually saw the Berlin Wall come down. I mean, it was such a great conversation. It's always great to have veterans on. We appreciate all the service from all of our veterans, from Navy to Army to military to Air Force, and countless others. I mean, if I missed it, I'm sorry, National Guard, all of those. We just appreciate it regardless. And yeah, I mean, this was a great conversation. I won't get too long-winded this week. We just appreciate all of the guests that keep coming on. And hey, if you want to get on the show, go to hammerlanelegends.com. Hit that contact section, get a hold of us that way, or you know, visit us at hllpodcast@protonmail.com. Links in description. If you guys want to get on the show, if you have anything you want to share with us, if you have stories like this or just regular, you know, chill stories from the road, hit us up. We want you on the show. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great weekend. Stay safe, people.
The driver's door, ran out the side of the car, across the front of it, and jumped right off the side of the bridge in front of me.
The only people that really pulled over were truckers.
He said, "We're going Hodge," and he didn't slow down. He went across the median onto the oncoming traffic, but where they could see him coming, they just got out of the way.
I noticed his plane was really low. He went right in front of us, hit the fence, and it spun around. You know, 30 seconds more, he could have hit us.
And I went around that truck, and a guy stepped out from behind the truck and threw a piece of wood, and it shot through my window just like a spear and stuck in the back of the cab of my truck.
That's probably one of the stranger things I've seen.
Welcome to the show, everybody. You're listening to Hammer Lane Legends. I am your host, Tony Merkle.
And I'm Ryan Merkle.
We're really glad you're here. If you have a crazy and wild experience you want to share with us from the road, go ahead and shoot us an email. An email. Our email address is hllpodcast@protonmail.com. That's hllpodcast@protonmail.com. Or go to hammerlanelegends.com. Hit the contact section. And you can reach us that way as well. Either way works for us. Just get a hold of us. Dad, we got that voicemail line.
Yes, we do.
We did that voicemail line last week.
Yes, we did. It was a great show. It was a hilarious, fun show.
We got a lot of voicemails. We went through them. We had fun. And I just did a trip to New York with listeners of the other show. And they were talking about Hammer Lane Legends.
That's awesome.
And they were saying how much they enjoy listening and how it's just like listening to people sit at a table talk and how it's like they feel like they're just sitting there listening. And I'm just like, that's the goal. Yep. Awesome.
That's the feel we want.
Yeah, it made me feel good. And they were talking about the voicemail show and all that stuff. So we got that voicemail line. People can call in. Dad, what's that number?
That number is 515-585-MERK. 515-585-MERK. 515-585-6375.
Yeah, so if you're a new listener, the voicemail line, well, you can listen to the voicemail line show. Last week, we called it Father Trucker. You can call in and leave a quick hitter story that you have from the road, and we'll play it on the voicemail show. Originally, we were planning on doing voicemails as part of intros, but it's turned into its own separate gig.
Yes, it has.
So voicemail shows that we do where we sit around and we play voicemails that we got and have commentary in between. It's a lot of fun, and it turns out people really enjoy it, so
yeah,
we'll keep doing it. And for the business side of things, go to preparewithhll.com. That's preparewithhll.com. There you can get yourself emergency supplies, including food and survival gear. Now, listen, we talk about it every week, and we mention it about how you never know when an emergency is going to come up, that you're going to need those kind of things. And it's easy to just say, yeah, I'll get it tomorrow, and tomorrow never comes.
Yep.
But I don't know much about it, but I just saw, it was just in passing. Like I said, I was out of town. I was kind of busy. But I saw that in Miami, there was a condo that collapsed in Miami. Yes. And I think like 9 or 10 people died. Lots of people were injured and stuff. Mm-hmm. Emergencies, you know, yep. And it's not like, you know, if you survive that, you're homeless and you just don't know what's going to happen with some of those people. I've talked to people who, you know, they just find themselves homeless from a situation where it's nothing they could have done. But now they're living in literally their van,
right,
trying to figure out where they're going to live again. In those kind of situations, you wouldn't mind having some preparedness food where you don't have to worry about, you know, going to the grocery store, how are you going to do this kind of stuff? And that's what we offer. And that's at preparewithhll.com. And if you're a camper, hiker kind of person, adventurer kind of person, and you're out there in the woods, we got stuff there for you as well.
Yes, if survival you need gear. It, they've got it.
Yeah, so check it out, preparewithhll.com. Dad, who are we talking to this week?
Tony, today we're talking to Kurt. Let's get to it.
All right, let's go.
Today we're talking to Kurt. Kurt, how you doing?
Doing great.
Good.
Thank you for calling.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Thanks for coming on. Tony, say hi to Kurt.
Hey, Kurt.
I love doing that. So, Kurt,
how's it going? It's
going really well. We were just, you know, just kind of getting a little bit of feel for things and how you're doing and all that. And I guess the question to ask you is, you know, like, how did you get involved in driving and all the things that you were doing? We're going to get into a lot of conversation here with what you've done over the years and all that. But let's just start at the very beginning. How'd you get into driving and doing this kind of stuff?
Well, when I was 18 and I joined the Army, I was 18 and 4 days old when I left home.
Jeez.
I learned how to drive a stick, actually, in AIT. It's right after basic training where you learn your skills. So I was on a Willys Jeep at Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, driving around a dirt track, trying to learn how to shift with a clutch. So that was my first experience there.
Man.
Wow. Talk about, you know, kind of at a young age, kind of thrown into the fire there. But that's actually really kind of cool. It actually give you an opportunity to get used to doing that and driving with a stick. There's a lot of people nowadays that don't know how to drive. And even in the trucking industry, there's a lot of people who they go through truck driving school and things like that. And so they don't even learn now because most transmissions are automatic. They don't even learn how to drive a stick.
Well, back then, you had to learn how to use a clutch and a stick, and then they put you in the 5-ton, and then you had to learn how to double clutch. And then once you learn how to double clutch, then they put a trailer on there. Then you had to learn how to maneuver the truck double clutch and not hit anything. So yeah, it was a learning experience.
Yeah, definitely. That's actually really cool, though. So you learned all of your driving in the service.
Oh yeah, definitely, 100%. My whole the majority of my driving career was in the Army.
Okay,
so
very cool.
So, when you're in the military, is this something that you chose to do as far as getting into the driving and stuff, or is that something that was assigned to you?
No. Well, when I joined, you know, you take your ASVAB test and then you get your scores, and I was a horrible student in school, so my grades were horrible. So I qualified for either being a military police, a truck driver, and I think feel the artillery or something horrible. So I took the best of the worst. And I thought truck driving was going to be fun, and it turned out to be a blast. So
that's awesome. I'm just sitting here kind of chuckling to myself when I'm thinking, so if you don't do really well in school, you can be a military police.
Oh, yeah.
I know it sounds kind of, I don't mean to demean anybody. I don't mean it that way, but it just sounds funny, you know, in my own head. But that's just stupid sense of humor.
The scores that they qualify for. Uh-huh. But again, this is back in 1983.
Wow.
So we're talking back just a few years.
Yeah.
So I'm sure, a few things have changed since then.
I'm sure they have. That's a long time ago. I mean, I was still in high school back then.
I didn't exist.
Yeah, you didn't exist yet.
Well, see, back then, my dad and his dad, my grandfather, they both were in the Army. And then I was within days of joining the Air Force. And my dad sat me down and said, Curtis, I was in the Army. My dad was in the Army. And would you mind joining the Army? I said, not a problem. So I told the Air Force recruiter to go, and then I went and joined the Army.
I hear that. So, that's actually really cool. And if I may say, thank you for your service. I know you hear it a lot, but we do appreciate your service to the country.
Probably not enough.
Well, I agree with that, but thank you.
I appreciate it.
Yes.
Well, see, back in, I would say, 84, 85, I was stationed at Fort Hood, Texas. And there was a group of us new recruits walking down the streets, and they were calling us turtles, and because we were wearing our green Class A uniforms, and it was a different world back then.
Yeah, it was. It definitely was.
So I'm not familiar with a whole lot in that time frame with the military and stuff. Mm-hmm. But when you were getting involved in the Army, was there ever anything going on that you thought you might, be driving in some chaos? Like, I know we've had people on the show that were in Afghanistan driving and Iraq, and those are areas that kind of can be crazy to drive in. Was that a similar environment for you or no?
Back then they had Grenada going off, so that was always the threat from the drill sergeants and AIT. And basic was that you were going to ship you off to Grenada.
Right.
But, I mean, it never happened. I mean, I spent 24 years in the military, 12 years active, 12 years reserves. And being a truck driver is one of the most deployed MOSs, jobs in the military. And I never got deployed to a hostile environment, as crazy as it sounds.
That's good.
So,
I was going to say that's a good thing. I think that's a good thing.
I was listening to your past calls, and you had that civilian truck driver that actually is driving in Iraq and all over. And I'm thinking, this guy's doing my job. I should have been over there doing that, but they had a civilian instructor doing it.
Yeah.
Isn't that funny? I mean, that's true. I mean, you're in reserves there as a military driver, and he was over there doing it and not allowed to carry a gun.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So when Iraq kicked off, I actually was stationed in Germany, and I was running rotor blades from Frankfurt to Belgium to get taped up to be shipped off to the desert for desert operations.
Oh, wow.
So I supported the war,
right?
But I did it all from Germany.
Sure. But with something like that, I mean, it's necessary to have all of behind the scene type of all the work that goes on. We don't really ever think about that. We don't think about having to ship something from Germany to Belgium or do whatever it has to do so we can get, flighted over to wherever it's going or do whatever, but there's a lot of hands behind the scenes that we don't know about. So that's interesting.
We ran a lot of missions from Frankfurt to Belgium to support the Iraq war. So it was supplies, and my main thing was rotor blades though. So we had a 40-foot box trailer and drive it up and drop it off and pick up an empty and come back home.
Wow. So you're really like a line haul type of driver in the military.
Oh, yeah.
That's all I do.
Yeah.
Not rotor blades.
I did linehaul. Well, I did linehaul my last 4 years in Germany, and I did fuel delivery the first 3 years.
Wow.
So 87 to 90, I was in Germany, and considering how young I was, hauling 5,000-gallon tanker of diesel and jet fuel. Mm. So that I didn't know at the time. My dad told me later on that he was freaking out that I was telling him, "Hey, Dad, I got a load of jet fuel I'm taking across Germany." And he goes, "Yeah, Curtis, I was freaking out when every time you tell me you have a load of jet fuel."
Yeah, buddy. Like,
why?
Yeah, that's yeah. Go ahead.
I was just too young to even have any kind of fear about that.
Yep.
And exactly. That's what I was just going to say. I mean, the advantage of the military is they're getting a bunch of kids to come in who literally think they're invincible and they're not going to die. Why would I die? I have a whole life ahead of me. Sure you do.
Right.
Here, carry all this jet fuel around for us. We won't do it, but you can. Be all you can be.
The fuel depots were, in remote places. There was no maps or Google or GPS, devices to take you there. You had just the memory of the previous soldier that went there the time before.
Right.
To tell you how to get there.
That's crazy. That is, because hopefully you got somebody riding with you who remembers where they went, it's like, because I know it's like, driving someplace with Tony's mom and she's been there once before. It's like, do you remember how to get there? She's like, no. But nowadays we have GPS. So back then, there was none of that stuff.
And everything's in German.
Exactly.
Everything's in German.
That's true.
The paper maps are all in German. All the signs are in German. And the places that we were going was remote. The people didn't really speak English in those places.
Sure.
So it was really weird back then.
Yeah.
And then you got a convoy of 5 to 10 trucks. And, if you make a wrong turn, you're backing out, until you get to a place where you can turn around.
Right.
And that's happened, quite a few times.
Wow.
That's why I learned how to back was from my mistakes.
I don't mean to laugh, but that's like, that is, you know what? Sometimes experience is the best thing. Yeah. You got to do it now. So it puts you into that seat of, hey, I'm learning how to do this now because it's necessity right now.
Right now.
So, well, it is.
Yeah. That's
so,
that's
yeah, crazy. You get put in a position and like, okay, either you back out or you're spending the night in this field. You're going to learn how to back. So,
Yeah, there's no choices, and there's no sleeper cabs in the military, I imagine.
So if
what's that, Tony?
If you get turned around, you hit like a dead end and stuff or whatever, like you hit wrong way, and it takes you a while to get back on track and stuff. Is that something that you get questioned about, like where were you kind of thing, and you get kind of yelled at, or is it kind of expected?
Oh no! Back then it was expected. Even some of the senior drivers would hop into the newer drivers' trucks and back it out for them eventually if they couldn't get it out. Because the streets were all narrow and not all the low bridges were marked. So you're going through these small little German towns and you come across a bridge barely big enough for the truck and the trailer's not going to make it. You're like, okay, here we go again.
Yeah.
And a lot of times we didn't have a convoy vehicle leading like a Blazer or Jeep or anything to give us fair warning. We were running two or three trucks, just the trucks.
Wow.
So with a senior NCO in the front and somebody that knows where they're going in the back. So.
Yeah. Wow. I'll tell you what, that's driving by the seat of your pants.
It sounds stressful.
Yeah, it does.
It sounds so stressful.
Very stressful.
But then later in, say, 92, when I got into first trans, then I was doing line haul. That was 100% different. Every truck, we had our own CBs in there, and we had stereos. Keep in mind, there was no sleepers, So he basically made the bench seat into a sleeper when we were out driving, but.
Yeah, you do what you need to do.
We were able to talk to each other, though, in convoy via public CB. So. Okay.
Well, at least you have some conversation going on, and you can actually, because, you know, you drive long enough. Maybe it's a dumb question to ask, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Did they have, do military trucks have, you know, like radios you can listen to music or anything like that? It may sound like a dumb question, but I'm curious, you know.
Oh, no. So you had to go to the PX and buy a radio, and then you had to go get your speakers, and he had to jimmy rig it into the wiring of the truck.
Wow.
And, you know, mechanics really loved all that. Jimmy Riggin. Oh, I bet.
Yeah. Yeah, buddy.
Wow. That is crazy.
They didn't have cigarette lighters or anything like that. So
you're literally pulling wires that have power just to connect your stereo.
If I could pretty say much this, do you really want to be smoking cigarettes when you're hauling jet fuel?
Yeah.
So, yeah. When I was doing line haul for first trans in the 7th Transit Battalion there, or the one, we were doing pretty much everything. We did mail, fuel, ammo, vehicle parts.
Wow.
You know, support of the war. I hauled everything in those 4 years.
Wow. That's actually really cool. That is really neat.
So what was it like when you're driving around in Germany? Was it kind of like relatively peaceful as far as the people go in their interaction with you guys, or did you?
Oh, no, the Germans loved us. So, okay. I mean, they were, for the most part, they loved us. You know, back then Germany was divided up into sectors. Canada had a sector, US had a sector, Russia had East Germany. So it was, you know, where you drove is where you're, you know, being with the friendly people. So we never went down into the Canadian sector or the Russian sector. We just stayed in the American sector with the trucks.
So these sectors, this is something that I probably should have learned in middle school history, but we talked about that before. I'm sure I don't really, I was not a great student. So like the sectors, is that all because of World War II? Is that how it all kind of became?
When they broke up the country, they gave part of it to Russia, and then the U.S. had a section, and Canada, they had like the south, down like Bavaria area, the Black Forest was the Canadian area. I only know that because my ex-wife is from that area, and we would go down there, and they always thought I was Canadian.
Oh, I had one question for you. When I was reading through some of the things that you had sent to us, and I just don't understand. You know, I never thought about it this way, but it said you said that you drove a 16-speed semi-automatic transmission. What is it?
Yes.
What is a semi-automatic transmission, if I can ask?
Okay, so these were, I think, Caterpillar transmissions. When you shifted these transmissions, you had to basically play with the gas and then the shifter at the same time. So you'd rev up the RPMs, and then when you came out of your gear, it was like neutral, and then you had to rev up your gas again and drop it into the next gear, or you can usually go two gears at a time, depending on your load. Mm. So you basically, it's like double clutching without a clutch. Okay. You raise your RPMs, neutral gear as you're driving down the road. Okay. And if you screw up, then your truck jerks and goes crazy like it does with a clutch when you screw up.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was just kind of, that's what I was curious about, you know, so you didn't use a clutch. You just used the fuel pedal and shifting gears.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
And you learn it, but it becomes like a dance when you're doing it. You just like you left your foot, your hand. And once you get that rhythm down, you can just go straight through the 16 gears. Usually you start about like 6 or 8. Mm-hmm. If you're empty or really light load, you can start in a higher gear.
Okay.
Rarely did you ever have to start in like 1 or 2.
Got you. Now, do they have
unless you're hauling?
Oh, go ahead.
Tanks or something. Uh-huh. If you're hauling tanks on a low boy, then you're starting at the bottom and working your way up.
Right. Is there a splitter on there like in a regular tractor? You know, when you go, you do your low gears and you flick the button up, split the transmission, and
no,
do your upper gears. So it's all just straight 16 shifts.
Yep.
Oh wow.
And then you had a on your dashboard, you had a switch, and that put it in your 6x6. So if you had to go to some rugged, say wet mud or whatever, you could put it in, you could lock in your hubs, and then you can go. But your transmission was straight 16 gears.
Hmm. These military vehicles, I mean,
yeah, it's totally different. Totally different. That's why I was curious, because it just, you know, it's different than what we have here.
Yeah.
In this, you know, civilian world. Right. So that's why it's kind of interesting. Yeah. That's an interesting thing to learn, to actually, you know, I had no idea that they were any different.
Yeah.
So
in our battalion, our company was the only one that had the 915s. The other companies had 915 A1s, and they were the 1-5 automatics.
Oh, okay.
You could just put in 1-5 and go and drive like, you know, a normal truck. Mm-hmm. But you could, they couldn't drive our trucks, but we could drive their trucks.
Yeah.
I can imagine. Yeah. Just driving something like what you were driving, I guess, is totally different.
Yeah, you could leave the keys in your ignition. Nobody's taking it.
That's true.
Yep.
Oh, that's funny.
So driving the Autobahn, how's that experience? Because I've heard about the Autobahn and stuff, but how different was it compared to driving highway here?
Well, back then it was more organized. Like if an ambulance came up behind or a fire truck came up from behind, and the left lane went left, the right lane went right, and they left the middle of the highway open, there was no question in which direction you were going to go to get off the road. So they knew exactly where to go, when to go, and how to go. Unlike here, people don't know anything. I see fire trucks, and they're just trying to push cars out of the way because they won't move.
Yeah.
So.
Most definitely, yes.
But see, even back then they were saying that the Autobahn didn't have speed limits, which is not true. They had speed limits back then as well. They were just
500 miles an hour.
Sometimes you could get away with that, but usually it was about probably like 80.
Wow.
So, yeah.
And for back then, that was fast. I mean, like, I mean,
this isn't 1920, it's 1985.
No, I mean, highways and stuff over since I've been driving have gone up in speed limits.
They, you know what I mean? And yes, so, they have. You're right.
Going 80 miles an hour back then, it was just like, you know, around here, I think you'd be hard pressed to find a highway that was more than 55 that wasn't, you know, a turnpike, you know?
Right.
I'd imagine.
Right.
Because
but keep in mind, Army trucks can never go that fast. Like when I was hauling fuel, my truck would barely get probably 60 miles an hour unless I was going down a hill. And then we slap it into neutral. We call that angel gear. And we just let gravity do its job.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've noticed that on driving behind Army vehicles or, you know, military vehicles on the highway. They are always in the right-hand lane, and they're always like 55 in it. And you're like,
yeah,
what is going on? Why are we slowing down? It's like, I don't know, you know, but whatever, I get it. Yep. You know, it's military vehicles. And once you start past them, you're like, it's always a convoy.
Yeah.
You know, it's like all these trucks are always like, and they're all doing like 50, 55 miles. I was like, holy cow. Are they ever going to get where they're going?
No. No.
It's one of those funny things. It's like, is there a reason why they do that? I'm curious, Kurt. Is there a reason why that they have it set? Are they governed?
Well, the 915s, when I was in Germany the last 4 years, those were governed, and they had tack boxes in them. So they had an NCO at end of every day or 2 days would go into your tack box, pull your paper out, and then see how fast and when you were driving and how, you know, when you stopped and when you were speeding. And but it's mainly just safety. They govern your vehicles for safety.
Okay. Yeah, I was just curious about that because it just seems like they're governed so low that that's why I was curious, you know.
Every once in a while, I see like an old military vehicle for sale around here. Sometimes it's like a bigger like utility looking truck. Sometimes it's like a older tanker, and I swear, I get these stupidest ideas sometimes, and one day, I swear to you, I'm going to come pulling in the driveway with one.
Good. See what your wife says.
See what the neighbors say. They're going to be like, what the heck? This guy, he acts like he's like in the middle of nowhere, redneck Pennsylvania. Like, he acts like a redneck.
There you go, man.
It's going to sit in my backyard.
Those things are unstoppable, man. If you ever had one, you'll have a blast.
I know. That's what I'm thinking.
Take that out into a field.
Like, end of the world.
Drive it in 6x6 and go. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm thinking, like, end of the world scenario. I want that as a bug-out vehicle.
Definitely. End of the world scenario. Here we go. Red Dawn.
Yeah. I'll pull my blue tarp off of it, you know, pump the tires up real quick, dig it out from the halfway of dirt that's piled up around it, and we're ready to
rake
roll
over the motor.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea, man.
Yeah, you
get, Lindsay, where's the keys? Get the keys.
You could use that to deliver your emergency supply food.
There you go. Yeah. Courtesy of Hammer Lane Legends. Here you go.
That's right.
Here you go.
Wow.
Sell a truck and the food together as a package.
Yeah. I had a customer that I was delivering to, and the one day I pull in there, and there's an old military vehicle there. So I hopped up on the side of it. I'm looking inside. I even opened it up and kind of sat down inside of it and stuff. And the guy comes out, and he's the owner of the place. I said, is this yours? And he said, yeah, man. And I was like, dude, like, where'd you get this? And he told me all about how you can buy these things. I was like, oh, yeah. Yeah, buddy. And it wasn't that expensive. I don't remember. I think it was like $15,000 for it and stuff. I was like, that's not bad for a vehicle. You know?
I'm telling you. You better know your diesel mechanics because they break down all the time.
I'll find one.
You'll have to hire one full time.
Yeah. I'll find a diesel mechanic and I'll say, hey, man, if the world starts ending, you have a seat on my truck, but you're the mechanic.
But that's how we learned when we first started in those kinds of trucks, the 5 tons, the deuce and a half. That's how we learned. That's how you learn how to double clutch, and that's how you learn how to shift. That was before all the automatic stuff came out.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah. Now everything's automatic. So
back to your question about the Germans. See, I was in Germany when the wall came down, and I remember one time I pulled over into a break area and was approached by these Germans, and they were offering me sausage and bread and food and then even offered their daughters, like, here, take American, take my daughter. Like, no, keep your kids. Cannot take your kids.
I'll take the beer. I'll take the sausage. I'll take the bread. You can keep the kids.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Wow.
Like, yeah, it was wild.
So what
they just wanted the kids to grow up in a free country and, you know, have better things in life. But yeah, yes. It was insane.
It was, a totally different world back then, wasn't it? You know, when you had East Germany and West Germany and, you know, East Berlin and West Berlin, you know, it was a different world. The kids nowadays don't understand the whole socialism thing and what it was back then, you know, what it was to us, to our generation.
I had somebody on Instagram commenting on one of my posts, and they said, I forget how they said it, but it was, I must have tagged my post like with some kind of tag that got on like these modern communists, radar. Cause a bunch of them were commenting on and stuff, but,
okay.
They were saying things like, socialism works. It just wasn't done right in the past, and communism works. It just wasn't done right in the past. We learned from our mistakes, and we've done right this time, and all this stuff. I was just like, you guys are freaking crazy, man. You're crazy. I thought I was being pranked at first.
What they fail to realize is that human nature takes over, and no matter what you do, it's always going to turn out the same way, because human nature is what it is. It's just the way it is. You think it on paper, it all sounds great. On paper, you know, nobody owning anything and everybody having, you know, this commune attitude of we're all in this together. No, we're not. And no, they weren't in Russia. And no, they're not in Cuba. And no, they're not in Venezuela. And no, it's not how it works. You still always have the elite running the country. You still always have those who have money. You have the haves and have nots. It's just the way it is. It's like, why do you delude yourself with the idea that because it's you, you'll do it differently?
Yeah.
You'll be better at it than everybody else was. Take a look at the past, and it should tell you exactly why there's so many people who are like, no, history just repeats itself. Do you understand that? You're not different than the previous generations. And that's all I'll say on that subject.
That's like you gotta learn from history. You gotta learn from your mistakes so you don't repeat it. And until we that, it's always gonna happen, unfortunately. So
You're right. I agree with that.
You know, I heard that when the USSR fell, that people literally were able to walk into factories and take them over, like, I own this now. And they just started their capitalistic movement or whatever. I don't know. Just like this ability to create and do things and that they never had before. I guess these factories were just, you know, sitting around doing nothing. And so when it fell, they just walked in. They're like, okay, time to get busy.
It's what you always find ironic about all of these things. I mean, you think in 1918, 1917, during the Russian Revolution and all those things, they went from one oppressor to another. I mean, they went from the Tsar, who didn't really treat his people all that well, to, you know, a communist style government that didn't treat the people all that well. And so it's like you're trading oppressors. That's all you're doing. You're not really making it life any better, because it wasn't.
I think China really does it right, though.
Yeah, okay.
That's what I hear from the kids these days, you know? Okay. And apparently a whole society listens to what children have to say these days. Yeah. And so I think we should just follow the Chinese blueprint, because the kids these days say that it's great.
There's just
wonderful, yeah.
Let's just listen to the kids.
Let me know how that works out for you, Tony.
Yeah, exactly. I don't like getting too political on the show or anything like that. I mean, I have my own thoughts and my own ideas, but the whole thought of that is, you know, China doing it right. Ask the Uyghurs how it's working out, you know? I'm sorry. There's just, you know, whatever. Anyway.
Yeah.
But it's cultural differences, Dad. You don't understand.
Of course.
You don't understand. It's just cultural differences, okay? They have a different way of doing things over there.
So, Kurt, how much did things change from the time you got into the service in 1983 until you actually left service? Was there a big swing? I'm sorry, about 10, 11, 12 years of service? About 11 years of service that you had as you know, in the service. Was there a big change in how things were when you were in, you know, driving wise and all the different things that you did, all the kind of hats that you wore while you were there? Was there a big change?
I mean, I started off as a private, you know, doing what I was told. I ended up as a senior NCO in E7, Sergeant First Class. I ended up teaching in a school for about 10 years. So I was teaching people how to drive and how to back and all that fun stuff. So that was like my end of my career in the reserves as a instructor. So I was a truck driving instructor for the reserves, teaching people that never drove before how to become a truck driver.
There you go.
So when you turn down this road, you're going to hit this hard left and then you're going to back it up. This is how I do it.
But you know, that's really cool, because you went from learning how to drive the hard way to now, you know, when you were in the reserves, you were teaching them how to drive. I mean, was there those kind of classes when you went in, or you know that you were doing at the end when you were in the reserves? Was that one of those things that changed? Like they used to take you in and then they just throw you in the truck and say, "Here, take this into this field and learn how to double clutch and how to drive it." Or is that what you were still doing in the reserves? Was that how you were teaching? And I don't mean no. You know, I'm curious how the process of teaching them how to drive a truck changed in those years.
So like when you get into a unit, then they're going to evaluate your skills, and they have their own training program within that company. So like my first duty assignment after AIT, Advanced Individual Training, I was driving a 20-ton dump truck in Texas at Fort Hood. So we were learning how to drive these huge dump trucks, and they would put you in with a trainer, and probably about 2 weeks of training that you get with this guy. And once you prove your skills, then they sign it off and give you a license.
So, wow.
Did you ever think about driving in the States once you came back?
Well, I mean, I was at Fort Carson when I got out, and when I was in the military, I got my Class A CDL while I was still in active duty. I actually took the CDL driving test with my Army truck. I had a 915. But it was an automatic, not the 16 gears. Mm-hmm. It was an automatic. And I did the whole test with that truck and a 40-foot trailer. So after I got out, then I did a little bit of driving. I hauled propane and roofing materials. I ran a boom truck for a roofing company. But then my neighbor came over and said, "Hey, this computer company, I won't say their name. This starts with H, ends with P. They're hiring and they need salespeople." Uh-huh. So I went and did that for, 15 years. I was very successful selling.
Wow.
So I was doing inside sales. So I learned that I can make a lot more money, a lot quicker, a lot easier doing sales than I could.
There you go.
Pushing propane up a mountain.
Right.
So.
Right.
Yeah. When you mentioned about the boom trucks, that's a job that I just don't want to do. And it's because I have one image that always pops in my head. And when I first started driving truck for Pitt, Ohio, I was down in Center City, stressed out of my mind, not knowing what I'm doing, where I'm going. Everything's tiny for the truck. And I came across a road I wanted to get down and I couldn't. So it messed up my figuring out where I was going, because there was somebody delivering roofing material to one of these buildings and they're shooting it up. And I saw it and I was just like, there's no way I would ever want to be down here in the city doing what that guy's doing right now.
Oh yeah.
You know, cause like you're pissing everybody off, because he had the whole street blocked off. I'm like, oh my Lord, no way. If I think I'm stressed.
That was the first job I had, was running a boom truck after I got out of the Army. Cause I had a crew. I had an old Mack that I had a double clutch. I had a split shift. I mean, it was, probably the truck probably was 15 years older than I was. It was just a beast of a machine.
Right.
But it ran. It was a solid truck. It could pull anything anywhere. It was insane. And then you had to gently put your conveyor belt on the top of that building. And then one person's on the top, one's on the bottom, shuffling shingle bundles. I mean, that was the most fit I was ever, even in the Army. I mean, I was buff at that time, but
that's a tough job.
Those are days long gone.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear that.
Well, you know, you imagine doing that job before they had the conveyor belts and boom trucks.
Oh, yeah.
And getting those shingles up on the roof on a ladder.
On a ladder, yep.
So, you know, progress, and it's a good thing.
Yeah.
So the guys, you know, being parked in the middle of the road and blocking everybody each direction is like, okay, that's one problem, but it's alleviated a bunch of other ones. So, you know, my hat's off to anybody that does that type of work. That's hard work to do. It really is. So.
And if Oshie would ever saw us, they would have had a heart attack because we would ride the conveyor belts up and down.
So. OSHA's got nothing on you.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Safety first.
So.
Yeah, it's...
I was delivering propane up in the mountains here in Colorado, uh-huh. and my truck broke down every day for a week straight.
Wow.
And I told the owner of the company, like, if I break down tomorrow, I'm not coming back because I'm sick of sitting up in these remote, you know, areas with no phone, no cell phone service, walking 2 miles to a house to call you to come fix it. Because they had three trucks and they were just rotating them through the shop. This one's fixed. Go take this one. That break down. And it broke down every day for a week. And I said, I'm done. That's when my neighbor came to me and said, hey, maybe you should try selling. Computers are really hot nowadays. You could sell some. So that's what I did.
That was a smart change. That sounds like it worked out pretty well for you. So that's good.
Yep. I'm still in sales today, selling technology. So, I mean, it laid a great foundation for me.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
And when the economy's down, I use my CDL and I go drive locally here. A couple of years ago, I was driving dump trucks for a local sand and gravel company. So,
is that like a part-time gig then, just to help make ends meet, or is it like when you're out of a job and you just revert back to CDL driving when you have to?
But when it's my fallback on when I'm out of a job, I get laid off or company closes, and I think there's always truck driving. So
yeah,
I'm always being asked by local truck driving companies here to join them, and they're trying to, they say, here's $5,000 bonus if you come join. That's okay. I'll wait.
Yep. You'll still need me in another couple of years when mine falls apart. I'll come find you again.
Behind that $5,000 is headaches I don't want.
Yeah.
Yep. Not being home. I enjoy being home every night.
Yep.
So it's like being out 8 days and home for two or something like that. And I'm like, no, don't want to do it.
No. And I don't blame you. I really don't. I don't blame you at all. It's nice to be home. This is a rough life sometimes. Like now doing what I do, I'm home every day, but it still wears on you, because you don't know how long your day is going to be. It's just the nature of the job.
When I was doing line haul in Germany, the goal was not to come back. So we would get a load, take it to a destination, sign for the next load. Then we would call our company and say, hey, made my delivery. I got a new delivery. This is where I'm going. And I say, okay, have a nice trip. And we would try to see how long we could stay out in one stretch without coming back to the home station, to the base.
Is it that boring at the base?
That's where your sergeants are. That's where the details are. That's where PT is. If you don't go back, you're not doing PT. You're not pulling the CQ duty at night. You're not doing any of that garbage.
Gotcha. So. Yep. Makes sense.
I heard that.
Now I understand. Yep. Yeah. I would be doing the same thing. How long can I stay out on the road? My own boss. So,
and sometimes you stay at Air Force bases. So you got to stay in Air Force hotels pretty much for free. So they had, I don't know if you ever know the difference between Army and Air Force, but the Army would get the Air Force's secondhand stuff that they were throwing out, their desks, their beds, their whatever. Air Force had the best of everything. So, we would stay at Air Force bases and we would check into the hotels, which was free because we were on duty.
Right.
We were making deliveries. And they just like, okay, here's your room. So we just sleep in our truck if there was no place to stay. We would just throw our sleeping bag across the driver's seat and the passenger seat and put a cushion in the middle over the shifter.
Right.
And then we just called it good. So
that's a young man's job right there.
That is a young man's job. That's like, that is the no comfort hotel.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. No AC. No. If you had fans in your truck that worked, that was great, but they were loud as heck. So yeah, it's a whole different world back then.
Yeah. Yeah. That is amazing. That is really, that's cool. But
I think back on it with reverence, and I'm really enjoyed those thoughts. I mean, when I left, I was the senior driver in the company. I had the most accident-free miles when I left, 125,000 and change.
Wow.
And that was just driving local in Germany, so in Belgium. So
now I'm kind of curious, how many hours of a trip is it from where you were stationed in Germany to Belgium?
That was like 7 hours.
Wow. So Europe just seems so much smaller. That's why I didn't think it'd be that far, but that long, but I guess it is.
We would drive from, I was stationed in Nuremberg. I would go from Nuremberg to Frankfurt. I would pick up my trailer in Frankfurt with the load. The next morning we would spend the night. The next morning we would drive to Belgium. It was like 5-6 hours to Belgium. And then we would drop the trailer off there, spend the night picking up an empty, and repeat the process back. So it was, I mean, you're driving across Germany lengthwise,
right?
Not it's through the long portion of it.
Sure. Sure. So. That's interesting. That really is interesting. Just kind of a cool thought. You know what? It's a neat experience. I can imagine that's something that you take with you. You get to see Germany. You get to see some of, Belgium. You get to, you get into some of these things. And like, you hear about these things here in the States, but you've never seen them. You see pictures, but, it's kind of an interesting thing to experience that. I think that's neat.
When I was younger and married, I was married to a German, and we would go camp across Europe. So I went camping in Austria, Czechoslovakia, Italy. We went to Spain, Luxembourg. I mean, we did a lot and seen a lot. We were always on the move doing something. So
got to see.
It was fun.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It definitely sounds like it was fun. Now, this is going to be another one of those kind of goofy questions, maybe a dumb question to some people, but how did you like the food when you weren't eating? Did you ever eat off? I imagine you guys ate off base, and you got a chance indulge in the culture around you. How did you find to be the people and the food and all of that?
Loved it. I mean, the people were fantastic for the most part. They were great. The food was awesome. I still love to go eat German food whenever possible. We have a local restaurant here in town that's pretty authentic. And then the beer, I love the beer, but it is very fattening. So I put on a lot of weight doing that.
Especially when you're not going back to the base for a while because you keep getting new runs.
You're not getting any PT time.
Oh, yeah.
No PT time. Lots of beer time. Yep. You come back to the base after a month and you got a beer belly.
You look like somebody after COVID. after the lockdowns.
Much.
Yeah. Wow. But that's just really interesting. I was always kind of curious about that, because that is one thing. I love German food, but I've never had an opportunity to go to Germany or, it kind of immerse myself into that culture for, any length of time or at all ever. But it'd be something neat to do, actually go visit Europe and travel around and see some of those
things. Hold on a second. Hold on. I thought we were related to Angela Merkel. I thought I thought you'd been over there. I thought.
Yeah,
I'm confused right now. I could have sworn you said she was my aunt.
Like, I never said that. I had no idea who she is. Yeah, Aunt Angela.
You never wondered why I always said Aunt Angela over all these years? Now I feel like I lost a family member. Jeez.
But it would be cool to go over. Wouldn't that be cool? I think that'd be fun. That'd be an awesome trip.
Now it makes sense whenever I would call over there.
They'd just hang up on you.
They wouldn't answer me. Start calling me a terrorist. I was like, what the heck? She's my aunt. Anyways.
Yeah, I mean, basically just got to learn, a little bit of language. learn questions. You learn how to ask for a beer. So, I mean, you learn the basics and you can go pretty much anywhere there. Because the Germans, they're trying to speak English to you all the time. They want to practice their English more than I'll let you German.
Oh, no kidding. So
And back then, in the early 90s, late 80s, it was 4 marks to the dollar. This is before the Euro mark came into play. So everything was dirt cheap. So, wow. I mean, it was great.
Yeah. Oh, my word. That is cool. So the 4 years that I spent in German class in high school that I don't remember anything more than I can count to 100 and I know my colors and a few key sentences, I'd still be okay over there.
They speak most of the Germans speak fluent English, especially in the larger cities.
Wow!
Now, when you get into the rural communities, that's where it gets a little bit rougher. But yeah,
I made it through all of high school without taking one single language.
No languages, not no even language. English.
Apparently, yeah,
not even English.
Not even English. Apparently, they say that you're supposed to like have at least one language. I don't know. They didn't want me there. So they're just like, fine, just go. Just go.
Give him a study hall. He'll be fine.
It's kind of like my school. They pushed you through from one grade to the next. Yeah. Okay. Get him.
I was the oldest of three kids, and I was like, guys, there's two more coming. you want to push me through, but there's two more coming.
Get used to it. Well, I mean, you went to a school that's, 150 kids in your graduating class or something like that.
Yeah, it was like two. Yeah, something like that.
So, and
I came from the same environment. When I was younger, I went to one school. But my mom passed away when I was 16 from cancer, so I had to move to the rival school where my dad lived. So, it was a tough time. I mean, I went from going from the school I went to all up to 11th grade, changing to my rival school for my senior year. So
yeah, and that's to walk through what you walked through at that time, not just losing your school, losing your mom. That's devastating to a kid that young. It's difficult even when you're older, so I can imagine what it was like for you to lose your mom and at the same time have to give up all of your friends, the school that you go to, the area that you're used to and all that. That's a lot of change for a kid that age.
Oh, yeah. And I always credited my mom for the reason why I never got deployed to Afghanistan or Iraq, because I always thought she was my guardian angel watching over me, because the orders would come in for everybody around me. I'm like, okay, I'm next. And the orders never came. I'm like, what the hell?
Wow.
Okay. I'll go if you want me to go, but I'm not going to volunteer to go.
Yeah.
So. Heck yeah, I'm with you on that.
Hear that.
But now that's really interesting. That's neat. I'm glad you're able to remember your mom like that. That was cool.
I always thought she was there. You always feel like the presence of her. So, but yeah, I mean, I got into some really hairy situations in Germany, and I swear it was a miracle that I got out of them without any issues. So,
like what?
Like driving down and coming to a dead end. You got a 40 foot trailer or a 30 foot trailer, 5,000 gallon tanker, and you got drop offs on one side, a farmer field on the other side, and you have to go backwards like 300 yards.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it's not straight.
Yeah. You got that safe, all that safe driving and stuff because you learned how to back up. I think some people probably didn't learn how to back up too good. And they're like, oh, there goes my safe driving award.
And the trailer and the tractor and me.
Yeah.
Right off the edge.
Yeah. Hopefully the farmer's field.
We had one guy, he went around a corner too fast with the tanker, and he rolled it, and he put 5,000 gallons of diesel fuel in this farmer's field.
Wow.
They're still probably paying that farmer for all the stuff that he could have been growing for, hundreds of years.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he rolled the tanker, rolled the cab, crushed half of his body. He got medicaled out after that.
Wow. Holy cow.
He was only 19, 20 years old. He was just a young kid.
Oh, my word. Yeah, that's a shame.
So,
yeah.
But that's when you're thinking invincible. You can't get hurt.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
And stuff like happens, like, oh, I guess you can get hurt.
Yeah.
think twice about it.
Yeah, most definitely. And that is, especially with, you know, young guys, you know, that age group and giving them that much responsibility with, you know, 5,000 gallons of diesel fuel or, you know, jet fuel or whatever. I mean, it's just 19 years old and, you know, you're medicaled out of the service because of something like that. That's life changing. I can't imagine, you know, what that's like.
And they would, you know, test for, and ask you, do you have narcolepsy? And they're like, oh, I don't know what that is. No, I don't have no narcolepsy. And then people would fall asleep at the wheel and crash their truck. You know, we had one guy crash his truck and burned a whole trailer full of mail. He went to Fort Leavenworth for federal property destruction. So
really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Wow. You talk about adding insult to injury. Not only did you crash, you burned the truck, you burned the mail, and then you got to go sit in jail. Wow.
And sit in jail.
Do you know how long he had to sit there?
Wow.
I don't. It's been a while. It probably was a while, I would imagine, though. Yeah. So,
holy cow.
And they always, you know, take pictures and post the pictures on the bulletin board. So-and-so did this on this day. Don't be the next person to do this stupid, you know.
Right.
Like, okay.
Don't be that guy.
You're 18, 20 years old in Germany. There's no drinking age. You can drink what you want, when you want, and how you want. So you drink all night, get up early in the morning, hop in your truck and drive. I'm basically on a hangover.
Wow.
Or even sometimes a buzz. So, well, yeah, this isn't very weird. So
safety first. Wow. It's funny because, like, you know, like, that's one of those cultural things that you don't know until you talk to someone who's been there, you know, and that's one of those things that you find out that you're 19 years old. It's like here, you know, drinking age is 21 in most states, I guess. I mean, it is here anyway. And so you go someplace like that and there's no drinking age. And you know, what do you think a 19-year-old is going to do, you know?
Right. Yep. And see, when I went to Fort Hood, I was only 19 right after AIT. I was able to drink on post on Fort Hood at the military bars. I just couldn't drink off post because Texas at the time was 20 years old for drinking age. Now I was only 19.
So, yeah, I got you.
But I could drink on post, though. I could go to a local bar until midnight and drink as much as I want, then get up in the morning at 6 o'clock and do PT and hop in my truck and drive.
Wow. But, you know, there's part of me that is like, you know what, if you're old enough to serve your country, hold a gun, carry a gun, drive a tank, do whatever it is that you do during the day, you're old enough to drink. That's just how I look at it, because it's like, you know, you're asking an 18-year-old to do all these things. If they can do all these things, if you trust them enough to do these things...
Drinking age is arbitrary. It gets me so irritated with that stuff. It's like 21, can't drink till you're 21, can't buy tobacco till you're 21, but at 18 you can sign up to go put your life on the line. That's okay. And and by the way, at 18 you can sign a loan the size of a mortgage for the next 4 years of your life. That's okay.
For college.
But, you know, your mental acuity to know how to handle yourself drinking and whether you want to buy tobacco or not, it's not there yet. You can't figure that out yet. You're not mature enough. But you're mature enough to sign on that dotted line for those huge student loans and to sign on that dotted line to go die in Iraq. That's okay. It's so stupid. I'm tired of the stupid stuff.
It is kind of one of those things that I look at and I'm like, that's sometimes it's just an arbitrary number that they throw out.
Don't worry, they have our best interests in mind.
Of course they do.
We have the best and brightest.
And that's what our thought.
Yeah.
And that's what we thought as well.
Sure.
If I'm old enough to sign my life on the line and go to war, then why can't I go and have a beer at the bar.
That's right.
Yeah. And as long as I'm responsible and I don't cause any problems and I'm not drinking and driving.
Yep.
Well, you know, we couldn't have any alcohol in our military vehicles, but you could drink before you got in it. Mm-hmm. You can drink after you got out of it. But while you're operating it, you just had to be sober.
Sure. So that's why you hang the bottles of beer from the mirror. Yeah. It's not in the truck.
There you go. Yeah.
Well,
yeah. It was a blast. I mean, it was great. It's memories that I'll never forget.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, that is really cool. It's really cool. And yeah, it's been a lot of fun talking with you, Kurt. It really has been. We had a good time. It was a good conversation. And it was neat to hear the experiences that you had.
Well, hopefully I get to continue having, you know, future adventures. But this time it'll be pulling my boat and not a 30-foot trailer, 40-foot trailer. So
yeah, yeah.
Yep. Amen to that, brother.
I like the end game of pulling the boat more than anything else.
You got that right. You got that right.
Put me on a lake for a few hours. I'm happy, happy, happy.
Heck yeah! Give me a boat and a fishing pole.
Yeah.
Can of Coke.
I've been thinking about getting a boat myself.
Good. Yeah, that sounds like fun.
Yeah.
I don't know how you guys deal with the idiots out there on a daily basis driving trucks nowadays. I dread it even think about going back out there with the trailer. So I appreciate everything you guys do because you guys keep the products moving for everybody else. So thank you.
Well, that's the show, everybody. I hope you enjoyed it. Dad, did you enjoy it?
I did. I certainly did.
Good. I enjoyed it, too. Kurt was a good guy.
Yes, he was.
And it's always nice talking to a military vet and driving overseas and things like that. You know, it's just, you know, I can't imagine it. I mean, I've never been in the military. I've never really even left the country except for one time. I went to Canada just across the border. I just, you know, dipped my toe across the border for my honeymoon, you know, vacation, Niagara Falls thing. And we were supposed to go to Puerto Rico, but I was scared to fly. So we decided we drove 8 hours from the Philadelphia area up to Niagara Falls because I was scared to fly. I do fly now, but I was not about that life back then.
How about that?
Yeah. So, you know, to hear
how you've grown up.
I've grown. But, you know, to hear how people, you know, serve in the military, they're all over the world, find themselves driving, you know, in different areas and stuff. It's just, you know, it quite literally is a whole different world, you know. Yes. It's just crazy. So it was really good to hear from Kurt and have him share his experiences.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I always appreciate people who are willing to serve and thank them for their service. Yeah. It's always a great thing. So
absolutely.
We appreciate that.
So if you guys appreciated it, Dad, what can they do?
They can share the show. Share it with their friends, share it with their family, share it on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, any other place that they're at, that they are on social media. They can share the show with, you know, on Facebook easily, but just by hitting the share button. You know, we appreciate that. We appreciate when people share the show.
Yeah.
That's how it grows. The more you share it, the more it grows, the more it grows, the more interviews we have, the more conversations we can have.
That you can listen to.
That you get to listen to, yes.
Yeah, just picture us when you're thinking about sharing, if you think about sharing, when you're thinking about it right now because we're talking about it. Just, you know, when you're a kid and the kids are fighting and they're all in a circle and the kids around in the circle are going, fight, 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 fight. Just picture me and my dad sitting there, one on each shoulder going, share, 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 share. Just share the freaking show.
Which angel are you?
I'm not the angel. I'm the one with the horns. Yeah, I'm the one with the horns saying, you can do it. Don't worry about the consequences.
You know, well, you know, while we're talking about it, the thing to do is right now, while we're talking about it, hit the share button.
Just hit it.
Right now.
Yep. If you're on an app, click that link, copy it, and share it with your friends on social and in the text message. But share the freaking show. And until next week, friends, keep the hammer down.
In the hammer lane.
Later.